Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode here on Hacks and Hobbies. In our previous episodes with Phil Marchand, we know that he loves jazz music and he's actually plays a really amazing instrument. So we'll get a little listen to that. But he also shared his journey and inspiration behind Unforgettable. Today we're diving into the core framework of the book and how you can apply them into your events. Phil, welcome back. I know you've got a special treat for our audience today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, Phil. That was absolutely amazing. Being able to play with such expertise, and you are a musician after all. So anytime I get to experience live music playing, it just blows my mind because of how much effort and work goes into it. So thank you so much for coming back.
Absolutely. Can I tell you a story?
That's what we're here for.
This is a story that can encourage your audience. So it was in 2004, I got asked to come help plant a church in Chicago, and I was in rural Georgia at the time. And Chicago is like the pinnacle of jazz. Jazz is hot in Chicago. So I'm thinking, this is awesome. I'm going to get to be part of the jazz scene in Chicago. I can't wait. The next year, 2005, I've had a keyboardist in the church who was one of the top keyboardists in the city. And he was playing at one of the top jazz clubs called the Green Dolphin, which no longer exists. But at that time, it was the place to be. And I was just going to go listen to him one night. He calls me and says, "Hey, Phil, my top jazz sax player can't make it tonight. And neither can my number two. And instead of me calling everybody on my list, you're coming tonight, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Would you just like to be the saxophonist as opposed to playing on one song?" And I'm thinking, I arrived. And I get there for the gig, and within minutes, I realize I'm way out of my league. And when I get nervous, my mouth dries up like cotton, and reed dried up. And I was making terrible sounds, songs that I should have known sounded like I didn't even know them. Mm. It was literally one of the most miserable experiences in my life. Entire drive home, I was with this guy, Jose. I barely said a word, and internally I vowed that's never going to happen again. Mm. And so I started what someone called woodshedding. I began playing an hour or two every day, and it took 5 years. But 5 years later, I started stepping on stages, and I was gigging four nights a week. So I used that really negative experience as fuel. Mm. It took a long time to get there. And I think that's a really encouraging story to your audience. Is if you'd have asked me in 2005 to play on your show, there would have been no way on earth.
Yeah.
But because of the confidence that was gained for playing, and I've just figured out how to be me, I don't need to be somebody else. I don't need to be Charlie Parker or Michael Brecker. Just being me. And I think that's a word for everybody in your audience is figure out who you are, be comfortable with who you are, put in the work. You may have to go to the woodshed like Charlie Parker did. If you don't know that story, look up Charlie Parker Woodshed, and you'll get the story of how he transformed that negative experience he had at age 17 to become probably one of the top 3 to 5 legends in the world of jazz.
Wow, that's a powerful story. And you're absolutely right. We've got to take those mistakes, or you got to take those fails and turn it into fuel so that we can be better in the long run. And I've had a, I don't know if it was a bad experience, but or a bad performance, but it was me speaking on stage at PodFest one of these years. And I was like, I'm just going to bomb this. But I did as best that I could. And I was so nervous that I actually broke my laptop. Like the the literal screen of it because, and I'm like, oh, this thing is bent. Let me fix it. And I, of course, I broke the whole thing. And I'm like, now I don't have a laptop. How am I going to do this presentation? Luckily, there was a friend of mine who was like, hey, just use my laptop. And the presentation was online. But again, it was a interesting experience. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be on stage because I'm so nervous to talk in front of people. But Phil, let's start with the 3Ms framework that you mentioned in the last episode. Having these events memorable, meaningful, and momentous. Can you help us break down each component and explain how they contribute to creating these unforgettable experiences?
The first pillar is being memorable, which you could say is equivalent to being unforgettable, but not necessarily. Memorable might pass in time. So that's why I think it's one of the three crucial ingredients. And there's three things that I identify. The first one is you're doing something that's unusual, something that's going to stand out. So you've been to our show several times and you've seen that on the main stage that Leslie Samuel does something unusual to introduce Mike Stelzner. You referenced in the last show that we had a virtual choir. Mm-hmm. Most marketing events don't have live music for one, but having a virtual choir is pretty much unheard of. So those are unusual things. The next element is that it's a combination of things that are not usually put together. So, you know, in that sense, you're combining ordinary elements. And I love to reference the Savannah Bananas because there's something many of us know about the phenomenon. And what they do is they've said, we're going to do things on a baseball field that have never been done before. But they're not doing things that have never been done. They're just saying they've never been done on a baseball field. So they're looking in ordinary life like they've got a pitcher who happens to be a rodeo cowboy. And so when he pitches, he then takes his lasso and he goes out and tries to lasso the base runners and prevent them from getting to the next base. And it's hilarious because he didn't expect it. So you're taking ordinary things, combining them in an unusual way at your event. And the last one may not be something you think about, but it's combining the senses, sight and sound, smell, taste, and feel. And the most powerful memory hook is your sense of smell, the olfactory. You can probably immediately think of something positive and negative if I asked you to remember, what does your grandma's house smell like? You probably have an odor that immediately comes to mind as you stepped into her house. It might be a perfume. For me, it's her baking bread. I can immediately smell that. I can also smell whatever she used to clean the floor. those two smells combined. I can't even describe the smell of the cleaning floor, but I would know it instantly when I walked in. It's related to the taste of their well water because they had well water. So smell is really important. And it helps people remember your event, even if they don't recognize it.
Yeah.
So I like to have some sense of smell when people walk in, because usually we're doing events in a sterile environment, somewhere that's been cleaned, the walls are blank, you have to create the experience, and smell is one of those things. But the researchers have said, the more senses that you engage, the more likely people are to remember what they've learned and experienced at your event. Most of us have sight and sound locked down. Like we have slides, we put up graphics, we make sure that people can hear what's going on and there's music. So, you know, there's always room for improvement in those things to make it more memorable. Lots of different tricks that you can play. But the other three are places that we can improve and make our event stand out. So that's memorable. And I recommend at least picking one of those things.
Yeah.
If you're trying to take an element of your event, pick one of those three things and say, how can we make this more memorable? You're not trying to change everything at once. In fact, you ought to just pick a couple things so you can say year to year, did that make a difference or not? If you try to do all nine things that I'm going to tell you all at once, you're not going to know, did it make a difference or not? Now, if it's your first event, then I am going to say, let's create a recipe with these things of what you think your event should be based on who you are, 100%. But if you're trying to improve an event that you have, then just pick a couple things that you're going to focus on to improve.
Man, that's really powerful, having these different ways to engage the senses. So I'm going to ask a funny question. What kind of smells did we have at the event? Just last one, what kind of scents did you use? Or were there any used? Because I don't remember smelling anything. Maybe I had congestion going on.
Well, and they weren't overpowering. Okay. But at the registration desks, there were some diffusers there, and we had some eucalyptus plants in the building. So they were very subtle. You may not even have recognized them.
Sure.
But we have tried things in the past. In our networking plaza, one year I tried this, and I'm not sure if it worked because we didn't have any like before and after to be able to test. Yeah. But we were at the Marriott, and I said, hey, I want to create the smell of coffee in the networking plaza, because I believe if they smell coffee, they'll stay longer. Starbucks does it. They actually pipe the smell of coffee in with the belief that it's doing it. And restaurants will pipe in French fries or hamburgers or whatever. So I'm like, let's get the smell of coffee. And I didn't want to pay the thousands of dollars to these companies that are out there that actually do this.
Sure.
You can buy things that will put into the air different odors on large scale. So what we did instead is we got vats of coffee, huge vats, tens of gallons of coffee. Then we took an industrial size fan and we put it outside the room. People didn't see it or feel it. And we blew the smell of coffee across the room before the networking break. And who knows if it worked, but it was a fun experiment.
That's so cool, man. I love that. I love that. Now, you've mentioned having 9 different ways that you can make your events memorable, meaningful, or momentous. So I'm guessing each of the M's have 3 sub-elements. And you've also shared some of the ways that you've implemented it in your events. Talk to me about how event planners ensure that they're incorporating all 3 elements into their events, if it wasn't all 9 of them.
For the visual audience on YouTube, why don't you show that framework that I gave you and we can walk through the 9
Let's
elements.
Let's take a look at this framework. Here we go.
Yeah, so we've talked about memorable. Meaningful means you understand who your audience is, because you don't want to create experiences that are irrelevant. If you've got a bunch of accountants in the audience doing hyped up music and dance numbers and choirs on the virtual camera, may not be what they want. Yeah. That might be way too far outside of their comfort zone. Although I would say most people want human experiences. Most people want more than just sitting and looking at slides and studying, but make sure it's relevant to the audience that you have, that whether you're talking about content, the experience in the hall, and then stories. So create stories that they're going to remember. The narrative of your conference is going to be important. So, you know, whether you're looking at the story of the person as they go through the event, you're saying, okay, each step of the way, how do I make this relevant for them? What's going to cause them to lean into this experience more because they're feeling like, wow, I am part of something bigger and my story actually matters? And an aspect of that is the third box there, the emotional journey. So I'm looking at what is someone feeling like if they're a first-time attendee, when they walk up to the door, what's the emotion that they're feeling? What are they going to feel after they've gone up the stairs, elevator, escalator into the experience? Now they've met a couple people, they've been greeted. What are they feeling now? Now they're going through registration and there's a long line. How do I make them not feel frustrated while they're standing in line to get their badge? And then to me, like the most awkward moment in a conference is, I've got my badge, now what? To me, that's the worst. If I've come alone, that is the worst experience on the planet.
Yeah.
To sit there not knowing, where do I go? Who do I talk to? So to me, you've X'd it there. You've got to have a plan for that moment. And then you're looking at moments. So meaningful is, I've thought through, how is this meaningful to the person individually, but also collectively? What is that experience like? How do I make sure it's on target for them? Then their momentous is looking at certain moments. There's a book called The Power of Moments by Chip and Stan Heath. And they have this theory that not all moments are created equally. Mm. And I would say not all experiences are created equally, but we want to make those experiences memorable. So we look at a couple different things. Peak moments. So those are the moments that matter more. Those are the moments that stand out. So it's like when they arrive, it's that registration experience. It's the first session, like all the first that somebody has, those are peak moment experiences where we have a chance. So one of the places that are often overlooked in the trajectory of the conference social media marketing world is the event for many people starts in a workshop on the pre-day. It's not with the opening keynote. It's in that workshop. And it's real easy to overlook that as a peak moment. It's like, this is their first taste of the conference. And if it's flat, they're like already in a negative place before they ever get to that opening keynote where we've got the virtual choir or we've got the acting. So you're looking at peak moments. You're also understanding what the valleys are. Those are the things that you just can't help. What are those things that are going to be negative that are part of the experience and you can't really help it? Like they're falling asleep. That could be a valley right after lunch with the natural circadian rhythms. Our energy is deflating. So what are we going to do about it? What are our plans for the valleys that are just naturally going to happen? The breaks that people are on and at some point their energy is flagging and I don't want to meet one more person. So how do we plan for the valleys? And then I talk about brick and mortar. And by that, what I'm talking about is most of us, when we plan events, we've got really good elements. We've got, you're going to be a speaker. I'm going to be a speaker. We've selected the speakers with care and we've put the agenda together on purpose. But the mortar is what holds it together. We haven't thought about what's going to weave together all those elements into a story, into something that's going to stand. If you're building a wall, and you have great bricks, but you don't have mortar, it's going to fall over. And you obviously, you also don't want a wall made of mortar. You don't have a wall. You've got to have the bricks. But the mortar is things like your MC. So if you don't have an MC who really is gifted at understanding the energy and has plans when something goes wrong, because inevitably something is not going to go according to plan, a great MC is going to make it feel like nothing went wrong. This was always the plan. We're going to have a 7-minute intro to this session. And if they do their job, no one's going to know. If you look at those 9 things and you combine them all together, you're going to be starting to create unforgettable experiences for your audience. You don't know individually what's going to stand out. And I'll bet if you looked at 22 versus 23 versus 25, there's different things that stood out to you about your experience because you were coming in with certain things on your mind and in a certain state of mind and life was happening in a certain way. So we're trying to create an experience where we can move you from wherever you were when you walked in the door to a place where you can receive whatever you were meant to receive. And that ends up transforming you. And I believe these 9 things will get you on your way. It's not a one size fits all. It's not comprehensive. Yeah. It's not universal. But if you do these things, you're going to make huge steps toward having an unforgettable experience.
Man, I love that. I love that. Thanks for sharing the visual because that gives them the different strategies. What are those strategies going to make that the event memorable? I'm already forgetting the M's.
Meaningful and momentous.
and momentous. I remember the memorable ones because that's the most remembered one.
Memorable.
All right. Yeah, memorable. Now, Phil, I love that you've shared it. You've gotten in so much detail on this framework. And I know when people purchase a book, they can go even deeper in how to actually implement it for their own. So thank you so much for putting that together. Now, a question that a lot of people might ask, what are some of the common pitfalls that you should be avoiding when trying to create these memorable experiences?
I think the number one pitfall is we create an event for ourselves instead of for our audience. So you may be the target audience, in which case, awesome. But most of the time we are not. So just as an instance, social media marketing world's audience is predominantly women. I obviously don't fit that from the beginning. Wow. And then it's between 30 and 60 years old. I barely fit that. They're from North America. They're a marketer. I don't fit that. So immediately I have to say, okay, I'm not that. I need to talk to the audience to understand how they're going to receive this. So I think that is the biggest mistake I see people making. And then avoid creativity for its own sake. Like, where does your creativity fit within that 9-step framework that I talked about? Where does it fit within the customer journey? How am I improving the experience? The ultimate goal, I talk about this in the book, the merry-go-round effect. So if you're on a merry-go-round, there's centrifugal and centrifugal forces, right? So a merry-go-round, if it's too fast, is going to either throw you off or it's going to push you to the middle. Mm-hmm. Either one of those are great experiences, right? You're going to get hurt or you're not going to be able to get off. So yeah. Ideally, a merry-go-round is going at the right pace for the person who's on it to be able to continue to want to be on the ride. And that's regularly the decision that people are making is, do I want to stay on the ride? Do I want to lean into this? Or have they been thrown off because you're throwing too much at them too fast? Or are they falling down? It's like they can't hold on. Or is it too slow? Too slow is, oh, this is boring. I'm getting off. And maybe for somebody else, it's the right speed. So you've got to understand those dynamics of how to create a pace that's right. For me, when someone says it was like a fire hose going to an event, I don't take that as a compliment. If you felt like it was a fire hose, you got wet, you got clean, but nothing stuck with you. It wasn't refreshing. It's like a sandblast. So a fire hose to me is not a compliment. It's a negative. I want you to feel like I had a healthy meal. I had a good meal. I feel satisfied. I know what to do next.
Yeah.
Because that's really the biggest thing. If events make a mistake, it's not setting people up for that next step. What do I do next? It's not the 15 things I should do next. It's coming to the conclusion of, I need to do this. And then I've got a list of things I can do after this, but it's not setting people up for that because transformation comes not at the event. The events are a pivot point in my mind, and this is actually the theory of my next book. An event can be a pivot point, but what happens after the event and before it sets you up for that pivot and encourages you or helps you pursue the transformation that can come because of what started at the event.
Wow. That's deep and thoughtful. Obviously, you spent years and years crafting these events and telling stories through these events as well, because the few things that I do remember is there was a theme for every event that I went to. The theme of the first event, that at least the keynote, was The Matrix, right? We had Leslie Samuel dressed up as Morpheus, and would you believe the future that I tell you? And then this year, we talked about AI and how there's another, I think it was a Castaway, and how do you get off the island, I think. So there was a really cool way to tell the story. And what I love about storytelling is because it's a very powerful tool, and you've told nothing but stories to help us create those connections. Now talk to me about how does storytelling play into the 3 M's framework, and how can event planners leverage it effectively before we sign off?
Yeah. Go back to, I got my master's in divinity to be a pastor. And as I learned to preach, one of the things they told us is people don't remember the facts that you shared. They remember the stories that you tell. And so stories create hooks for the facts. It doesn't go the other way around. In the broader sense of the event, you remember Morpheus, and is it the red pill or the blue pill that you're going to take? This year it was with Thor, and I'm forgetting that movie. Not Avatar. Anyway, I'm
Avengers.
It right now. Avengers, thank you. So now you've got this picture of Thor. Last year it was Toy Story, and you've got Buzz Lightyear and Woody. Mm-hmm. So those stories sit in your brain as a hook for what else had to come. And so I think great storytelling creates a framework that people will feel something and they will remember it. And if you've done a good job, they'll connect that story with what you learned and the people that you met. Like, I'll bet you have stories of people that you met in the hallway at party when you were first entering the building. And those probably stand out more than sitting in a session where they taught you about AI.
Yes.
Unless something happened in there that was a story.
Yes. And a really good job. That's somebody that I know does an excellent job of telling these stories and really getting you hooked into is our favorite Pat Flynn. He did a closing keynote for one of the events where literally everybody was crying and how he was telling the story. So his event, his his talks are really powerful. And of course, he's done 360 of those public speaking events. I was like, whoa, that's really powerful. I would like to get there someday, although I don't know how much time I've got left. Phil, thank you so much for sharing these invaluable insights. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be on the show.
Now, for listeners eager to learn more, where can they find the Unforgettable book and connect with you as well?
Yeah, I would go to philmershon.com. Don't put www in front of it. Just go to philmershon.com. All my social links are there. There's a link for buying the book. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, bookshop.org, Books A Million. All of them have it. I think Target and Walmart. It's Perfect. Available through all the places that you would normally buy.
I love it. Thank you, Phil. I cannot wait to get my hands on the book as well. Thank you again so much. This has been a masterclass in creating unforgettable experiences.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for sticking around. That was an awesome experience with Phil. We'll catch you in the next episode. If you have any questions at all, please feel free to reach out to me or Phil. We've got the links in the show notes. And if there's nothing else, we'll see you in the next episode.
Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to our guest on this episode. Please send me an email at junaid@hacksandhobbies.com to tell me what you loved about our guest today. You could find links mentioned in this episode on the hacksandhobbies.com website.